You ever feel that itchy nose like you've got a sneeze that's about to come? Open in your Old Testament, if you would, tonight to 2 Samuel chapter 21. 2 Samuel chapter 21. Not going to take a lot of your time this evening. Have a simple little story I'd like to look at. I think it's a story that sometimes we tend to pass over as we are making our way through the Old Testament. And felt like I may have worked you too hard this morning, that I tried to throw a lot of material at you, and I felt like I was kind of speeding through, trying to read passages kind of quickly in order to cover all the material. And I apologize if I didn't get the points across that I wanted to. I hope I did. Hope that maybe you'd say, no, we got them. We were with you. We saw where you were going. In 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 1 and 2, it says, there was a famine in the days of David for 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, it is because of Saul and his bloodthirsty house, because he killed the Gibeonites. So the king called the Gibeonites, and he spoke to them. Now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. The children of Israel had sworn protection to them, but Saul had sought to kill them in his zeal for the children of Israel and Judah. The scripture reading that we had tonight was from Joshua chapter 9. I'd like to encourage you to turn back there just for a little bit and look a little bit more at that fuller story that's given there. And a lot of what we're doing tonight is reading, and I hope that you'll follow along in your own copy of the scriptures. But it says in chapter 9 and verse 1, it came to pass when all the kings that were on this side of the Jordan, in the hills and the lowland and all the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard about it, that they gathered together to fight with Joshua and Israel with one accord, as they heard about their victories over Jericho and Ai, and they saw how that God was with this people, they decided what we need to do is we need to ally ourselves together to fight against them rather than letting them pick us off just one nation at a time. And several of them had that thought. They were inclined that way, but not all of them. Verse 3, but when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they worked craftily. And they went and they pretended to be ambassadors. And they took old sacks on their donkeys, old wineskins torn and mended, old and parched sandals on their feet, and old garments on themselves. And all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua, to the camp at Gilgal, and they said to him and to the men of Israel, we have come from a far country. Now therefore make a covenant with us. Then the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you dwell among us. So how can we make a covenant with you? But they said to Joshua, we are your servants. And Joshua said to them, who are you and where did you come from? So they said, from a very far country your servants have come because of the name of the Lord your God. For we have heard of his fame. I'm going to pause here just for a second. You know, when the spies went in and spoke to Rahab, she said, we've heard of your fame. We've heard about what you did in Egypt 40 years earlier. She said, we heard about what happened down there. And we know what has happened just across the river, across the Jordan River. We know about the kings of the Amorites that you slew, their armies that you defeated. We know about you. Your fame has gone throughout the land, Rahab would say. And she would say, because of that, the fear of your people is upon us. Well, we see that the Gibeonites are saying very much the same thing. They say here what he did, what their God did in Egypt. Verse 10, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, to Zion, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. Therefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, take provisions with you for the journey and go to meet them, and say to them, we are your servants. Now therefore make a covenant with us. This bread of ours we took hot from our provisions from our houses on the day that we departed to come to you. But now look, it is dry and moldy. And these wineskins which we filled were new, and see, they are torn. And these our garments and our sandals have become old because of the very long journey. And we see that they're deceiving them. They're telling them, took us a long time to get here. Took so long to get here, look what happened to our bread. And look what happened to the wineskins in which we were carrying the wine. Verse 14, then the men of Israel took some of their provisions, but they did not ask counsel of the Lord. They didn't ask God about this. They didn't inquire of the Lord about this matter. So Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the rulers of the congregation swore to them. So here are people, and they have deceived Israel. They have not been truthful. They have misled them. But Joshua and Israel made the mistake of not consulting the Lord, not seeking His counsel about this matter. They made their own decision about the matter. They decided themselves whether these people were trustworthy in what they said. And so believing what they've been told, believing the men of Gibeon, they made peace with them and they let them live. And as we read just a few moments ago, or we had read for us beginning there in verse 16, it wasn't but a few days, and they learned the truth about the matter. They learned that they were dwelling very near to them, that they were their neighbors. And so verse 17, the children of Israel journeyed. They came to their cities on the third day. Verse 19, but the children of Israel did not attack them because the rulers of the congregation had sworn to them by the Lord God of Israel. And all the congregation complained against the rulers. Then all the rulers said to all the congregation, we've sworn to them by the Lord God of Israel. Now therefore we may not touch them. This we will do to them. We will let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which we swore to them. And the ruler said to them, let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers for all the congregation, as the rulers had promised them. And then you have Joshua, and it almost seems like what we find here precedes this. But in verse 22, Joshua called for them. He spoke to them, saying, why have you deceived us, saying, we're very far from you when you dwell near us? Now therefore you are cursed. None of you shall be free from being slaves, woodcutters, and water carriers for the house of God. So they answered Joshua and they said, because your servants were clearly told that the Lord your God commanded his servant Moses to give you the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. Therefore we were very much afraid for our lives because of you, and we have done this thing. They admit their fear of God, but they kind of admit their belief in God. That they saw Him as truly existing and having been with His people and having brought them out of Egypt and brought them up this far and given them all of these victories. And so they honestly say, out of fear, we have done this thing. And now, here we are in your hands. Do with us as it seems good and right to do to us. So he did to them, and he delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel. The people wanted to kill them. People wanted to say, this shouldn't count. They deceived us. They lied to us. This wasn't the truth. But the leaders delivered them out of their hand. And that day Joshua made them woodcutters and water carriers for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord in the place which he would choose even to this day. And so going back then to 2 Samuel in chapter 21, what we're reading in those first couple of verses is that Saul violated this pledge. He violated this promise that had been made, that they would do no harm to this people, that they would allow them to live. Yes, they were to be their servants. But because they had sworn this, because they had promised this before God, they had to keep this promise. They had to be true to their word. But Saul did not let that stand in his way. And what Saul was guilty of was a very great wickedness. And he showed himself to be bloodthirsty in this matter by putting this people, many of the people, not all the people, but a good number of this people, to death. And by the way, there's some other things there to think about. We don't have time to talk about it. But you kind of wonder, you know, why it is that David and why that Israel had not picked up on this earlier. They knew this. They knew of the covenant that had been made, the promise that had been made. And they certainly should have been aware of the fact that Saul had violated that promise. And you kind of wonder about David at this point in time, that here's a famine. And God had told the Israelites that basically, when I'm not pleased with you, there will be things that will happen. I will withhold the rain. And he was admonishing them as he did that. He was chastising them. He was saying, there's something that is wrong. And here is a famine, and it exists for 3 years. The text says year after year, the famine persisted. And you almost wonder, why did it take David so long to ask of the Lord or inquire of the Lord, why is this happening? Is there something that you're not pleased with? And God says to him, yes, there's something that I'm not pleased with. Yes, there's something that has not been corrected. The famine is because of what Saul did. Wait a minute, David is king. But it was a wrong that was committed by Saul, by the previous administration, I guess. He and his bloodthirsty house, they killed the Gibeonites. And so David, he calls the Gibeonites, as we read in verse 2. And look with me then, beginning in verse 3. Therefore David said to the Gibeonites, what shall I do for you? And with what shall I make atonement? How can there be atonement that is made for the blood that has been shed? What can be done? That you may bless the inheritance of the Lord. And the Gibeonites said to him, we will have no silver or gold from Saul or from his house, nor shall you kill any man in Israel for us. So he said, whatever you say, I will do for you. Verse 4. Then they answered the king, as for the man that consumed us and plotted against us, that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the territories of Israel. They're talking about King Saul. Let 7 men of his descendants be delivered to us, and we will hang them before the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord chose. And the king said, I will give them. But the king spared Mephibosheth, and you're going to see that name repeated because there's more than one Mephibosheth in this text that is mentioned. The king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the Lord's oath that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. A lot of things said here about oaths and promises, pledges that are made, and the importance of keeping those. And this isn't my sermon tonight. But brethren, there are oaths and pledges that we get involved in and that we make. Sometimes it's more of a conscious oath or promise, and sometimes it's more an unconscious pledge that we have made. But Mephibosheth is spared here. So we are told then about the ones that the king did take. He took Armoni and Mephibosheth, the two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, whom she bore to Saul, and the five sons of Michal, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Barzillai, the Mahalathite. Should have had somebody else read those names for me. And he delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them on the hill before the Lord. So they fell, all seven together, and were put to death in the days of harvest, in the first days, in the beginning of barley harvest. So they said, well, all right, if you're asking for us what should be the punishment, what should happen to make things right, then we think that there should be seven of the descendants of Saul that are hung. And David said, I will do as you ask. He allowed the Gibeonites to decide the penalty, and they seemed to show maybe some common sense, maybe even some restraint in their answer to David. It seems like they thought about it, and they tried to be wise about it. They asked, as we've said, that seven of the descendants be put to what would have been a very disgraceful death. Very disgraceful death. And that this should occur in a very prominent place, not just for Israel, but in regard to the tribe of Benjamin and in regard to those that would have been in any way whatsoever related to Saul, in Gibeah of Saul. So here are the seven men. There are the five sons of Michal. But I want you to notice there are two other boys here. Two other sons. I don't know how old they were. I call them boys. I don't know how old they were. But they are sons of Rizpah. And this lesson is really about Rizpah. I want you to notice what she does here in verse 10 and 11. But Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, took sackcloth and spread it for herself on the rock from the beginning of harvest until the late rains poured on them from heaven. And she did not allow the birds of the air to rest on them by day, nor the beast of the field by night. There are some very good Bible students that have commented on this and believe that what we're talking about here is a period of many months. Some feel that it could even be as much as 5 months that we are talking about here. All of the commentators are in agreement that we are talking about a very, very long vigil here. That this woman goes to where her sons have been put to death along with these other men. They have been put to death. Obviously, she was in great sorrow. She did not want this horrible exhibition to carry any more shame for her sons than it already had. She could not bear the thought of the birds and the beast coming and taking the flesh of her sons. And she encamped herself, we might say, right there to watch over the bodies of her sons. And the text tells us that David is told about this woman's actions. And it is obvious that it causes David to reflect on some important things here. Notice with me, beginning in verse 11. And David was told what Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, the concubine of Saul, had done. Then David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh Gilead, who had stolen them from the street of Bethshean, where the Philistines had hung them up after the Philistines had struck down Saul in Gilboa. And that's messy, and you got to go back and kind of retrace some of that history and looking what happened to their bodies and how that eventually they were burned. So what we see David doing is he takes the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan from those men there at Jabesh Gilead, And he also, verse 13, so he brought up the bones of Saul, the bones of Jonathan, his son, from there. And they gathered the bones of those that had been hanged. In other words, these seven men that we're reading about back here. They buried the bones of Saul and Jonathan, his son, in the country of Benjamin and Zelah, in the tomb of Kish, his father. So they performed all that the king commanded. And then notice what it says. And after that. After that, God heeded the prayer for the land. David seems to have exhumed once more the bodies of Saul and Jonathan in order to bury them in the family sepulchre, the tomb of Kish. But he brings all of these other bodies as well. You know, even good kings. And I think that we would say, well, that, you know, all of the kings of Israel, and when there was the division that occurred, when there was the united kingdom through Saul and David and Solomon, but through the period of the divided kingdom, all of the kings of Judah were compared to David. David was the model. David was the man that, as in the New Testament, Paul would say, he was a man after God's own heart. And that's what God had said to Samuel when he went to anoint him. I have found him to be a man after my own heart. David was such a good man in so many ways. There were many wonderful attributes that he had. He loved the Lord. But he made mistakes. He made some serious mistakes, of course. And it was not just in the sin that he committed with Bathsheba and the sin that he was guilty of in regard to Uriah. There were other mistakes that he made. But even good kings can get busy. And they can overlook matters that need their attention. And, brethren, I would suggest to you that these matters were of consequence. And we might think, well, what is... We're talking about what Saul had been guilty of, what he had done. And time marches on. And God basically says, this thing has never been addressed. This thing has never been corrected. This thing has never been made right. And if you're of the mind that it just kind of disappears, it just kind of goes away, it doesn't. It doesn't. And he says, I'm going to chastise you with a famine until you finally say, what's going on? And I'll tell you what's going on. But here was David. He had gotten busy. And David, by the way, is not, you know, we might think, well, the king, he had all power, he had all authority, and there was nobody else he listened to. That's not exactly true. He had the final word. But there were princes throughout Israel. But sometimes we think that because something is past, that we don't need to worry about it. That area of neglect. The matter of the wickedness against the Gibeonites needed to be corrected. And then, as really a part of David's oath with Jonathan, and supposedly the love that he felt for him as a brother, he loved him more dearly than an actual brother, and he loved him more dearly than a man might normally love a woman, Scripture says. He loved him dearly. And yet, in regard to showing any kind of respect in regard to his death and the death of his father, he had just kind of let that slip. And had not followed up in a matter that he really should have given some attention to. He really should have done something about. But I want you to notice, brethren, that it was a woman's quiet actions that caused Israel caused David to see that something appropriate needed to be done in regard to these bodies. They were just going to leave them out there hanging. But here is this woman, and what does she do? She just stays there and mourns and keeps her vigil, watching out for the bodies of her two dead sons. And we might say, well, we know that the body, when the soul is no longer there, when there is not life in the body, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. Well, that body represented two that were very precious to her, that she loved and she cared about. And it may not seem it made sense to others, but it made sense to her. She was not going to allow the animals to come in, the birds to come in, and defile the bodies of her sons. Brethren, I want us to understand that sometimes that even the actions of a very quiet, very meek individual can have significance, great significance among others. And the two often were kind of looking at the people that at certain individuals, and we're looking for their lead, and we're looking for their direction, and we're looking for them. Sometimes the actions of someone that's not really looking for attention, is just trying to be busy, just trying to do what they feel is right, can be so significant. And brethren, that's an opportunity that each and every one of us have. We all have that opportunity to exert an influence for good. And we don't know if anybody will see us. We don't know if anybody will pay attention to us. But God gives us an opportunity. And we need to take advantage of those opportunities, to make a statement. And it may just be enough to help encourage others to see, hey, that's something I need to be busy at. That's something I need to take care of. You've reminded me. By your actions, you've reminded me. Appreciate the kind way that you've listened to these things tonight. There's been a song of invitation that's been selected by Kevin. And if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we want to appeal to you in an invitation song. If you are a child of God, but there are things that are not what they need to be, then we want to appeal to you as well. But if there are any that would need to respond, we hope that you'd come while we stand, while we sing.